Now, any other items we need to discuss? I hope that's it for right now. All right. All right, my text for today. I don't normally begin sermons this way, but it is going to revolve around one text. Genesis 48, 14 through 16. Genesis 48, 14 through 16. And as we read it, don't jump to any conclusions as to what you think this may be about, because we're going to explain. Here is when Israel, formerly Jacob, then blessed Ephraim and Manasseh. And Israel stretched out his right hand, laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long until this day. Verse 16, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named upon them in the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And he went on and gave some things that were quite specific about these two children of Joseph. Now, this is not, the sermon today is not about the promise to the children of Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim, as one might expect whenever we read that. This is about what Israel, whose name was changed from Jacob, understood at a certain point in his life, a time when he knew he did not have many days left, his strength was gone, his eyesight was bad, but when he spoke under the inspiration and the vision of God. And before he gives the blessing, that is, what would come thereafter, Israel makes some statements saying, this is my experience. And what he then says is based upon his experience. Let's go back and cover a couple of points. First of all, where it says, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, he says, bless the lads. This is not just an angel, an ordinary angel. You may notice it begins with a capital A. But it says the angel of God. That's a little bit different the way it's put here. As Yahweh himself, or the Lord himself, was called in so many places. Here, the God of Abraham and Isaac is also one who redeems. This is not an ordinary angel. It's one who redeems. He is asking this one to bless the lads. This is not an ordinary angel. It's called the angel of God's presence, Isaiah 63, verse 9. And all their afflictions, he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them, or the angel of his face, as it could also be said. And his love and his pity, he redeemed them, and he bore them, and he carried them all the days of old. Okay, this, as I said, this is more than just an ordinary angel. Now, he's called the angel of God's presence, or angel of God's face, because God's face was seen in him, in his nature. It was in him. Paul says in Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, the one we know as Jesus, the Christos, or Messiah, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 3, he says, who, being in the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. And so who we're talking about somebody so much more than an angel. And so when he says the angel, he was referring to the angel of his face or the angel of his presence who actually saved him or redeemed him from all evil and all calamity. Now, for a moment, I would like to speak to the seniors amongst us. Israel was 147 years old when he said that. At least that's when he was when he died. And this is just before he died. So he was 147 years old. And Israel then, being at this point in his life, this is how he understood his life. It's very interesting what he said here. It's something we ought to examine. And so to you, I ask, I'm only asking this to you at the moment. I'll be talking to you younger ones in just a moment, which includes myself. But I would ask, what would you say about God at a time like this? What would you say at this point in your life? Can you say what Israel did? And what he said, and really mean it. Let's go over that. The God which fed me all my life long unto this day. Extraordinary, isn't it? That he understood that, and he saw it. He believed that. And the angel which redeemed me from all evil, all calamity, the horrible, bad things that could have happened to him, and there were occasions when it could have happened very, very badly. He says, this is what God did for me. Now, why does he say this? Let me make this point here. Once God chooses you for a purpose, now, I think you trust in that God chooses you for a purpose. This goes with it. It's not that, well, you fulfill his purpose. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they have obeyed my word. They followed my precepts, my laws, my commandments. Therefore, this is going to happen, and it's kind of cut and dry, and that's it. Whoa. Wait a minute. I think we're missing a whole lot here. Once God chooses you for a purpose, then this has to go with it. This kind of a relationship where you understand this is your relationship with God. And he concludes, as he looks back upon his life, this is what God did. He fed me. He fed me. Okay? I hope we can really grasp this point. He fed me all my life long until this day. He's provided. He's fed me. Now, for a person to say that, this tells you something about that relationship that he had. Was it always this way? As Jacob here seems to say, yes, it was. Was there never a time in Israel's life that it wasn't this way? No, there wasn't. He looks back on it, and he says, this is how it was. And it was a long life. Like I said, he was 147 years old. I want to just interject something here, and it ties in with it, and not loosely either, but it's something I want to, I just simply want to talk about for a second, and it's a matter that we have to face, and everybody operates on certain assumptions, and one assumption we tend to live by, maybe unknowingly, maybe knowingly, I don't know to what extent some of us think about these things, or it's a part of our consciousness, is that a significant part of the church believes that Jesus Christ is going to come soon. You might say, well, what kind of a heretic is this? Of course he's going to come soon. Well, now it just depends what you mean by soon. All right. Year after year goes by, horrendous events happen, and he doesn't come. We're so sure that because of all these things are happening that he just absolutely has to come soon. Events that you would think would portend the end of the world or trigger great catastrophes. Maybe we live for the moment that we hold on to the belief that it has to come soon. Why? Look at the GFC. Look what's happened to the whole world. Similar things to what Jesus was saying. Look at the global financial crisis that we have experienced. And we can build up a tremendous scenario in our mind and saying, it's really soon. Some people have set dates. Some people are so good at this, they keep their entire followings in check and loyal to them because they keep them strung out on the fact Christ is going to come, and he's going to come soon. Now, I'm not expressing an opinion here. I'm just saying there happens to be that belief. Okay, now you can look for that. You certainly can. But at the same time, if you have certain things in your mind, you could be very, very disappointed. Now, you remember I spoke to you about the Stockdale syndrome? Remember I spoke to you about this a couple of weeks before I left. The example of what they call the Stockdale syndrome, General Stockdale, was the ranking officer in North Vietnam, captured during the war. He was a pilot. Those who thought he helped a lot of the prisoners, he helped them get through it. But there were those who thought they were going to get out before the year ended. Those who were hopeful that it was going to end soon, and they had certain dates set in their mind that they played over and over again. And General Stockdale said, these were the ones who died. All right, now this should tell you something. These are the ones who died. And he said they died of a broken heart because they lost hope of ever getting back. Now, there were those then who took a different approach, and that is they didn't give up. They never gave up hope. The hard part is that you don't give up. Now, that's the hardest thing you have to do, is not give up. And you have to go through the whole thing. You don't get the immediate relief, as it were. You know, we're into take this pain medicine, immediate relief. Everything is about taste. Do you ever notice that? Doesn't matter how good it is or bad it is or whatever. It's about taste. It's about something that's going to satisfy you right now. It's pleasing to the eyes. That's what the devil did. You know, we live in this kind of a world. Jacob's saying this when he's 147 years old. Now, and he says this at the end of his life. The angel of God's presence has redeemed me from all evil. And there were times he was going to experience some very bad things. Death of his entire family, children. He was going to lose it all. So he looks back on it, and Jacob says this. But he had to go through it. He had to go through it. He had to experience a certain thing. I'm asking the seniors here. I'm asking the older people. Can you say this? Is that something at this point in your life, as we read this, Jacob said it. Can you say it? Now, you know it didn't always work out for you in some respects. Things could have been different, yes. But in the end, you're still here. A lot of people aren't. In the end, you're here. And some, maybe all, can say this. I hope you can. But you'll have to think about it and ask the question, can you say what Jacob did? And say it the way he said it. and have that hope forward into the future as he did because of what he experienced in the past, of what he saw, of what he personally experienced, and what God did with him. Now, well, where does it leave the rest of you, the younger people? You're young now. Some of you will have twice as many years to go as you have lived. For instance, if you're about 25, you can live, say, if you go to 75. Okay, you're going to live three times as long as you have now. Some will live twice as long as they have already lived. Some of us will live a third as long. Now, I've already spoken to the older people. But in the end of it all, you're going to have to arrive at a conclusion. And we ask the question, and you have to ask this question, I hope you will, is it going to go something like this? As he said, God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil then. So, let's talk to the younger group now for a moment. Jacob was young once. Yes? Everybody with me on this one? You bet. Things happened to him. He faced the prospect of death three times. It changed his life each time. Twice by Esau, his own brother. Once by Laban, his father-in-law. Well, you might say, that's strange. It came from his own family. Where do you think Jesus got this from when he said, a man's enemies shall be of his own household? Wow, it really was. And he was about to lose his life from those of his own household. Now, Jacob and Esau were both young. Some decisions were made, some things happened in their life. Not everything was right. But in the end, things worked out for one and not so great for the other. Now, the problem is that the one who it didn't work out for as well as it should have didn't know that it didn't work out. Now, he lost something. He understood that. He wanted it, but, you know, he really didn't know what he lost. Now, you might say that's a little bit strange. I think if he really knew it, he wouldn't have taken the position that he did. God knew the character of each one. Neither were perfect, but one had the capacity to come out of his dilemma. One had the vision. One had the belief. One had the ability to see what it all meant. The other one was a self-absorbed individual. And I appreciate what Joe had to say. He got a certain jar here and is full of self. And that was one of them. Let's go to Genesis chapter 25, verses 20 through 24. Let's see if we can pick out a few things here. We want to go through Jacob, with Jacob. Genesis 25, 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. And that's who Jacob would go to eventually. Now, Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, if all is well, why am I like this? And so she went to inquire of the Lord. Did you notice here in both these instances, before Rebekah conceived, and this when it seems like things may not be going well during the pregnancy, what did they do? They went to God, and they began to look for answers. Now, this is Isaac and Rebekah. Okay. Something, there was a part of this, there was this relationship that was in place. And the Lord said to her, two nations, very interesting. God here now is answering her directly. The Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, and he was like a hairy garment all over, and so they called his name Esau. And afterward his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, so that his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So we have 20 years elapsed without Rebekah becoming pregnant. Okay, finally, after the 20 years, he called on God. God answered the prayer. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. It could have been very simple if they had only one. Didn't work out that way. They got two. Now, there perhaps are reasons for that, and some things God was going to work out, and some lessons in it for us, of course. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. This is a very interesting family dynamic, would you say? Yeah. It doesn't take much imagination to know that we got some problems here in the family. Isaac had his favorite, Rebekah had hers. Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, they're grown. You're looking at, 25 to 30, could be up to 40, because we find that later on, it was around 40 years old anyway when he left. So Esau said to Jacob, feed me with the same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore his name was called Edom. Esau, Edom, okay. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die. So what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob said, swear to me as of this day. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils, and then he ate and drank, arose, and went his way. And Esau despised his birthright. Now, this is how God saw this. This is what God says about Esau. He despised his birthright. There was something at stake here, something big at stake. And yet, he turned around and he let it go, because this guy thought about his stomach. Did you ever notice your stomach has no taste? But that's what he was thinking about. look, Jesus says this, if a man come to me, this is Luke 14, I quoted this many times, verse 26, if a man come to me and he is not prepared to give up everything, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. We have the same principle here, and you will find God, whenever he chooses people for anything, they got to understand how important it is to God. And they're going to have to be prepared to do whatever it takes to appreciate it and to follow it through and to see it through. And this is who he wants for this. So we have two of them. One to whom it was going to go to because he was the firstborn. But he didn't. Now, I'm not in this to say to what extent God was behind this or not behind this. That is the method and the way it was all done. I simply want to make a point how Jesus would look at it once you come over into the new covenant and the eternal life from the first fruits or for the first fruits are being offered to people at that time. You can't treat it this way. Paul makes that point. He makes that point so clear that Esau then was really upset because he lost the blessing and the birthright. But I want to tell you something. Esau had no idea as to what it meant. Now, all you got to do is read what God said to Abraham. And then you go and read what God said to Isaac. And then these boys grew up on this. One was interested. One was deeply interested in it. One was, his mind was saturated with this, and it appears that it came out just like it did. His whole approach then was, this is so important, in that if only I had been born first, I could have this. And so this opportunity came along. He presents it to Esau, and lo and behold, how easy was it for Esau to capitulate and to give it away and to give it up. And you know what God says? If that's the way you feel about it, that's the way it's going to be. I will give it to somebody else. We can't approach it this way. And Jesus, of course, said the same thing. And it's put in this way. Esau despised it. If you don't appreciate it, you don't appreciate what God gives to us, you may as well despise it. That's what God is saying. Now, then came the time to pass the birthright on to the eldest, as was the custom. Genesis 27, verse 1. Now it came to pass, when Isaac was old, his eyes were dim, that he could not see, and that he called Esau, his older son, to him and said, "My son," and he answered him, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold now, I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow. Go out into the field and hunt game for me, and make a savory food such as I love, and bring it to me, that I may eat, and that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Esau went into the field and hunt game to bring it. And so Rebekah spoke to her son, saying, "Indeed, I have heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me game, make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.'" These people believed in this. They were standing before God. And whenever they said something like this, they understood what it meant. They understood God was going to back it up. This was no light thing. "Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I commanded you. Go now to the flock, bring me from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. And you shall take it to your father, that he may eat it, and that he may bless you before his death." Now, you know, Isaac actually lived a long time after this. I can't really pin it down, but he was about 100 years old. You know how long it was before he died? Another 80 years. A lot of things happened in that time. But it seemed like that, you know, look, it's pretty close to being over for him. Well, turned out it wasn't. So Jacob received the blessing and the birthright, it says. Esau received a second blessing, that which was left over. Jacob obtained it by deceit. But the blessing, however, was dependent on him living in the land. Now, something took place. Esau plots to kill Jacob. Now, that's not too far-fetched. And you have to take this seriously. You look at Cain and Abel. It happened. A brother is going to kill another brother because one is coming out better than the other. And the only recourse in the mind of this, of the one who feels that he was hard done by, is to get rid of the other one. Cain did that. Esau was going to do that. Genesis 27:41. "So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, 'The days of mourning for my father are at hand, and then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" Was that a serious threat? Absolutely it was. And he had to simply take it that way. How did Esau understand the blessing? How did he understand it? He was going to be the leader of the clan. He was going to be the one who would be over Jacob. Jacob could live there, but that's about it. Jacob had to be subject to him. That was the deal. That was it. That's how he saw it. I'm suggesting to you that Jacob saw it totally different. Jacob saw this as so far-reaching. Jacob saw this as an extension of the relationship that Abraham had with God, that his father Isaac had with God, and which we will see. Let's read on. And the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. And so she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran, and stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away." Didn't realize he was going to be there a lot longer than a few days, that's what it literally means. "Until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. And then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac. Okay, now she goes to Isaac then and says, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. And if Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth, like these who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?" he says. And what she's saying is, everything that we worked for, everything that we believed in, everything that's passed on down to us from the Lord through Abraham, now to us, it's got to be passed on. And if they go and do this, what good is it all, Isaac? You got to have a good straight-talking wife every once in a while. You do. Isaac is a pretty smart guy, and he sees the point. Genesis 28:1. When Isaac calls Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Arise, go to Paddan Aram, for the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother." Now Isaac is calling Jacob and he says, here's what you got to do. She's not telling him that Esau is going to kill him. She's just telling him he can't take a wife from here. That's all she's telling Isaac. Isaac gets the point, catches on, says, time, yeah. Jacob, you got to get out of here. Verse 3, "May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples." Now he says something, he's saying something here. "And give you the blessing of Abraham to you and to your descendants with you, that you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham." Now, those blessings that were to be passed on then had to do with descendancy. It had to do with the land. It also had to do with what they did in, by way of obeying God. And Isaac here is going back over this blessing. He is not retreating from what he said before in the blessing. He is saying, now, the blessing of Abraham is to you, Jacob, to you and your descendants. Now, but for this to be possible, you're going to have to go over and get a wife exactly the way my father Abraham got one for me, from the same people. And we had not a religion that was perhaps similar, but somewhat different. But it was the custom that the wives would take on the religion of their husbands. And he was to take that belief with him when he went. And as Sarah, then Rebekah after her, and whatever wife he got, it would be exactly the same. They would then follow the belief of their husband. So Isaac sent Jacob away, and he went to Paddan Aram. And Laban, the son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, the mother of Jacob and Esau. And Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take for himself a wife there, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan." Esau understands this. This is what he said. And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. And Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan did not please his father Isaac. So Esau went to Ishmael and took Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister and so on, to be his wife in addition to the wives he had. So he says, okay, I won't get one from Canaan anymore. I'll go somewhere else and get one. So Jacob went out from Beersheba, went toward Haran, and he came to a certain place and he stayed there all night. Now there's something that takes place here. Because the sun had set, he took one of the three of the stones, that place, and he put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and the top reached to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, he's seeing this, he's dreaming this, but it's very clear to him. The Lord says, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your descendants. This was the specific promise, the more immediate one, that was going to be fulfilled. And also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And you and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Now, we understand that to mean Christ. This is how Paul understands this, and he tells us that. Now, that mayor probably was not known at the time. He just said, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Verse 15, behold, I am with you. Here's where he says it. I am with you. And will keep you wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Here it was. He says, you can go. But what I'm saying is this. Wherever you go, I am with you. I will keep you. You ought to notice that. I will keep you wherever you go. And I will bring you back to this land. And I will not leave you. I will not leave you until I have done what I've spoken to you. Jesus Christ said the same thing to his disciples. I will never leave you nor forsake you. God is consistent in who he is, what he is, what he's doing, and what he says he will do, he will indeed carry out. Now, Jacob says later, after he hears this, 100 years later, when he dies, he says, this is the way it always was. That's the question I'm asking you. This is the way it always was. And when I speak to the younger people here today, is this the way it will always be? And to the older people, I ask you, can you say, is that the way it always was? This is what he says. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose early in the morning, took the stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, poured oil on top of it, and called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of the city that had been Luz previously. Okay, so this happened. This may be the stone, as people think it is. Probably is. I wouldn't have any reason to doubt that, in which the kings of Israel themselves were anointed, or kings of England, rather, were anointed. Genesis 28, verse 20, then Jacob made a vow. Now, this is quite important. He makes a vow saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going, he's going to Laban, keep me in the way, give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Now, this is not a condition. You got to understand the language and what he means here. This is not what he's saying. Then, you know, if God does all this, well, then I'll worship him. This is not what he's saying. He's worshiping God now. This is not somewhere down the future. He's making a decision. He's making a commitment right now. But all he's saying is that the Lord shall be my God in such a way in the land. And this is where he would prosper. This is where he would grow to be a great nation. This is where his descendants would multiply in the land. That's all he's saying. Okay, I want to explain that to you. He's not saying, bless, you know, you do all this, then you'll be my God. That's not what he's saying, all right? Just so everybody understands that. And this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. I hope we understand the relationship here. He wasn't going to cut God out of it. These people had a relationship. And at this point, Jacob makes a decision. He's 40 years old. He makes the decision. He makes his commitment. He does not leave the land. He does not go from here. He does not go elsewhere. He doesn't know how long it's going to be. Things are not set out for him. He can't predict the future. He just knows he's got to get out of there, but he makes the commitment. You want everything settled before you make your commitment? It's not going to work, folks. It doesn't work that way. God says, make your commitment. We'll take it from there. So he makes his decision. Now, he's got to go. He's got to face his demons. I use the word figuratively, of course. He goes to Laban. Laban deceives him and gives him Leah for his wife, the older daughter. And then he works for 7 more years just to get Rachel. How does he understand this? He thinks he's been shortchanged. Well, Leah wouldn't appreciate that, but that's how he would see it. Children are born. He grows into a huge company, outstripping Laban. Laban is sent against him. And Jacob is defrauded again with his wages over and over. God makes him prosperous anyway. You know, he made a deal with Laban. Well, at the time, he said, when he had to leave, he had to just get out of there. And he left. And he told his 2 wives. And he says, look, he says, Laban is just, he's done so many bad things to me. It doesn't look good. I have fallen out of favor. It's a matter of time till they do me in, and you're going to lose everything. And the two, his 2 wives says, yeah, we agree. We lost everything too. All we have is yours, is what you have. And so they said, wherever you go, I'll go. And so that's what they were prepared to do. At one point, there's one incident where and Laban comes after him, and he and Jacob have it out. And Jacob says, you've changed my wages 10 times. You have diddled me over and over again. But God still prospered me. You'd go to jail for that today. But that's how Laban treated Jacob. And he knew he was about to lose everything. Remember the incident where he made a deal with Laban He says, look, make a deal with you. All of the spotted and the ring-straight cattle that are born will be mine. He was growing. He was prospering. Laban couldn't do anything about it. And so Laban listens to that, and he says, okay, I'll go for that. You take the solids, I'll take the spots, just like a game of pool. All right. So they said they stripped down the poles of willow, and they put them on the ground. They said, and the cattle looked upon them, and they conceived. And the vast majority that conceived were the ring straight and the spotted ones. Well, you have a dominant gene here. I mean, any kind of a color, and that's it. Belonged to Jacob. But what did he do? It's very interesting. I don't know that anybody's ever come up with this, but it's probably what he did was this. You ever seen a cattle guard, or you know the principle of a cattle guard? A cow goes up to it, and sees it, it's not going to walk across his way. He's going to get his foot stuck, broke, that's the end of it. So what he did, he just laid these poles out on the ground, and Laban's far away, and he can't see this. He doesn't know what's on the ground. He just knows that there's cattle out there, and they're breeding, and they're having calves, and most of them are all spotted and ring-straight, and he's not getting anything out of the whole deal. And so what's happening? He's doing selective breeding, but Laban doesn't get it. Jacob was a pretty smart guy. So he just laid the poles out, kind of kept them like a corral that nobody could see. And you had to be right up on it to know what was happening. So he was out taking care of the cattle, and all these calves were being born, and they all had spots or ring-straight or whatever kind of cattle they had, and Laban couldn't figure out how come this is working this way. Well, it all built up, came to a point. Jacob had to get out of here, and he was gone. Now, I don't know if that's a valid explanation, but that seems about the most likely one that as to why it all happened that way. But he sees the handwriting on the wall. His life is in danger. The lives of all of those with him. Laban sees him as an enemy. He has got to get out of there. You're looking at about 20 years. Okay? One, I would suppose. Now, he's got to go back to the land. The only place he can go. Guess who he's got to face? Yep. You got to face it again. You can't get away from it. It's Esau. Genesis 32, verse 6. And when the messenger, Jacob was on his way. Genesis 32, 6. The messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is also coming to meet you. 400 men are with him. This does not sound good. These guys are armed to the teeth. That's the way Esau lived. And they're all mean, every one of them. Not a good place to be in their path. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people that were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, will escape. Now, that was his reasoning. Then Jacob said, O God of my father, Abraham, and God of my father, Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. I cross over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. In other words, when I crossed over and I left everything behind, I had a piece, I had a stick. That was it. That's all I had. He says, now I have two companies, probably hundreds of people, children, and all kinds of wealth. Verse 11, he says, deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. And now when he faces it, he has to do so on a basis in which he has to put it completely in God's hands. He says, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. Everything was going to be lost. Verse 12, for you said, and he's telling God this, for you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And he finishes up his prayer, but this is what he prays. Okay. I ask the question, when Jacob says, all my life you have fed me, and the angel of your presence has redeemed me from all evil. Was that true all the way through? And I say, yes, it was. It absolutely was. So he lodged there that night. He took what came into his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. So he's trying to appease him the best he can. And that night, he wrestled with the angel. And he knew who it was. And he says, I will not let you go until you bless me. He knew he could receive the blessing. He had to have it, and he had to have it stated and reiterated again. And he asked the angel, what is your name? And the angel says, why are you asking for my name? What is your name? And so he had to come to the point where he understood, I can no longer be a supplanter, which is what Jacob means. And so the angel said, you shall be Israel, a prince with God. And the meaning is one who wrestled or prevailed with God. He meets up with Esau, and it's fine. He comes back to the land. Everything goes well, and he loses Joseph, the firstborn of Rachel, who died with her secondborn, Benjamin. Joseph is sold into Egypt by his brethren. And Jacob, whenever he is sent for, Genesis 45, 25. Then they went up out of Egypt, came to the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father. You're looking at anywhere from 25 to 30 years. He hasn't seen Joseph and thinks he's dead. They went up out of Egypt, came to the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father, and they told him, Joseph is still alive, and he is the governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. You know what that means? Practically had a heart attack. His heart stopped. This is how powerful this was, this news. But when they told him all the words that Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. He says, what do I got to live for? He had placed so much in Joseph, who was the son of Rachel. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. 46:1. So Israel took his journey with all that he had, the same that came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night, and he said, Jacob, Jacob, and he said, here I am. And so he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. He says, go. He says, don't worry about staying in the land. I'll take care of that. Your people will come back. Just go. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. And so God then reassures him. Now, here's the point I want to make. Let me just cover one more point. 48, verse 11. Israel says to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, but in fact, God has shown me your offspring. Not only have I seen you, but I've seen your children. And then he blesses them. And then we have the great and the wonderful blessing that was passed on. Let's come to some conclusions here. What will happen in the future will depend on what you have done in the past. That's simply the way it is. He was consistent throughout his life. You can't let a big lapse go by. You can't say, I'll go do my own thing. Whenever he left the land, he had to be reassured. Okay, go. I'll still be with you. It's going to happen. Jacob made his commitment. He said he would return and follow the only true God, the God of Abraham and Isaac. And what we have here today is because not just what Isaac said to him about the blessing and the birthright, but what Jacob said on the hillside at Luz. If that did not happen, and we cannot overlook this, if that did not happen, then none of the rest would have happened. He could not have said, all my life he's fed me and brought me to this place. It all happened. What he said here depended on what he said at Luz and then how he carried it out. What we have here is a relationship over several hundred years with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, moving on to Joseph. This is always referred to in the Bible. The path or the way was laid. The way forward for Jacob had come to pass. It so benefited then Jacob's children that they were able, when confronted with the impossible, to believe and to come out of Egypt as a nation and follow God under Moses' leadership. And when Moses went down there and Moses said to God, what in the world should I say to these people? They won't believe me. He said, just say this. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob has sent me. That's all. Just say that. And these people who had heard this all their lives and had been so disappointed for generation after generation and their blood and their bodies spilt in the land of Egypt now heard this. It all happened. And this blessing came. They were rescued from Egypt. God revitalized the blessing with David, with the throne, then the seed of Christ, and then on the physical side of nation and a company of nations as we have it here today. Now, you can pass that on to your children. But let's not overlook this one point. You got to have your experience at Luz. You got to say this. You got to say, make your commitment. And so when I speak to the younger people, you can't not do this, because one day you're going to end up like Jacob. And what are you going to say? All my life, the Lord has been with me. A lot of people have had the opportunity, and a lot of people can't say that now. But this is what it's going to take. Yes, it's a long-term view. I understand that. You can't say, I've got an out. Christ will return. He will return real soon, just a few years. I can just hang on until then. Or we're going to say, this is my life. I make my commitment. I say, this is where I'm going to be. And you follow it through. And you follow the words of Christ. And you see, what did he say? And he said exactly the same thing. This is where we're at. And we can take the great comfort from one of our fathers, Jacob. Now, your story is in the Bible. Yes, it is. Everybody's story is in that Bible somewhere. You got to find it. I think we saw a big part of it right here today. Read the Bible. You're in there. You're in there.